Hello and welcome to the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for the show. Virtual private networks give us access to data on the corporate network when we're away from our desks, and also potentially let us watch our favorite streaming shows, just like home when we're on the road. That means that the term VPN casts a pretty wide net, and in this edition of the podcast, we'll take a look at what VPNs mean to you and your customers, as we're joined once again by frequent podcast guest Tony Anscom, Chief Security Evangelist at ESET, to discuss all things VPN. We talk about the difference between consumer and enterprise VPNs in terms of functionality, what they're used for, the relationship between RDP and VPN, why securing the VPN, including patching, is so important, and why just because you're behind a VPN doesn't mean you're secure and private by default. We also discuss the decision points in terms of selecting a VPN solution, how to configure and secure it, and what to train your users on in terms of cyber hygiene. It's a great conversation, so let's get right into it. My chat with ESET's Tony Anscom. Tony, thanks for taking the time once again.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Rob.
Always a pleasure to chat with you. And today we're talking VPNs, and it's an interesting tool, isn't it? Because it's security, it's privacy, it's consumer, it's enterprise, and we want to get into sort of some of the challenges, some of the pitfalls, pratfalls. But I guess first of all, what sort of where's that dividing line between what constitutes a consumer VPN, the type of which, you know, your favorite podcast host is shilling incessantly at the end of their show, and the enterprise VPN that is obviously used to gate corporate resources?
Well, there's very distinct differences, actually, Rob. One is from, so let's do the corporate one first, because maybe that's slightly easier to explain. Yeah, you have your machine that you're going to do your email from, whether it's a BYOD or whether it's an issued laptop or machine by the company, device by the company. Mm-hmm. And it creates, a VPN creates an encrypted tunnel between that device and actually inside the corporate network. So there'll be an appliance within or around that firewall area of the network. So it has a public facing side. But it also has access back through the firewall on the other side. So in my terminology, and I'm not sure this is a term that you hear used too much these days, it's in the DMZ.
Sure.
Yeah.
And appreciate the use of the letter Z there.
Yes. Sorry, yeah, that's my Britishness. I should have said Z, of course. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So and it gives you that secure path all the way from your device to inside the corporate network, right? And that's a distinct difference, actually, between that and a consumer VPN. So now you and I decide we're going to meet in the coffee shop. You know, we pop off down to that Tim Hortons, and they've got some public Wi-Fi we want to use. Now, Of course, if you're in a public spot like that, I'd recommend using a VPN, because public is exactly what it says on the tin. It's a public network. That means anybody that's on that public network potentially could start seeing the traffic that flows across it. So you want to make sure it's encrypted. So you might start a consumer VPN or a consumer designed VPN. Right. Now that's an encrypted point between you and the VPN provider, not to the end point where you're trying to go. So for example, just say you were trying to do some banking, which, by the way, I wouldn't recommend over public networks, even with a VPN. But let's just allow that. Yeah, you're trying to get to your Bank A's website. So your traffic would be encrypted between your device and the VPN provider. And then when it hits the VPN provider, it would come out of their infrastructure to the bank in its normal state. Now, if it was bank traffic, of course, that's going to be HTTPS, so that's also going to be encrypted. But if it wasn't encrypted traffic, so HTTP traffic, or you were sending email or something else, then it would come out as it normally would. So it's not end-to-end in a consumer scenario. It's from your end to the provider, and then from the provider on, it's as it would have been normally. So it's a protection of you at the public end of that stream. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So
Good.
you're protecting yourself from people seeing what's between you and the VPN provider, and some other potential side benefits of being able to, when necessary, manipulate where one is located for content viewing purposes and that sort of thing.
Well, and all that, you mean all that illegal viewing of TV programs and movies, and of course, and a lot of VPN providers in that scenario actually sell on that basis that you can get to content. And of course, it is super useful if you're traveling a lot. Sometimes you want to watch the same what you know, have the same content that you normally have at home. But bear in mind, in some instances that is very illegal. It's illegal, and those companies may well take issue with you at some stage because you are breaking their agreements. So I'm just saying.
So as an MSP or a solution provider, I guess actually I could be facing administrating or recommending either layer of VPN, depending on the customer, depending on their needs, and depending on the type of workloads that their employees are using.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in a very small environment, so if you've got a 2, 3, 4 man business, a consumer rated VPN, and you've got some people that use public Wi-Fi, and most of your services are probably cloud based, not on your own infrastructure because you're too small for that. And those services are all encrypted using HTTPS, so they're secure services anyway. You're securing that public end may well be enough. But as you grow as a company, then the likelihood is realistically you're going to end up with either a server-based VPN product where it's managing sessions, or even an appliance-based VPN product.
Just hardware that does the same thing, make sure I have access to those corporate resources when I'm outside the network.
Yeah, absolutely, and that hardware device sits on that perimeter piece, that DMZ. There you go for the correct pronunciation for that market.
Dad, we're Canadian.
DMZ. Well, let's call it the DMZ. And it will be around there, and then it will give access. Now, of course, one thing that what's interesting is how VPNs are used is it's good for remote access email and Word and but it's also important to understand that you might actually sit some remote access products also behind the VPN. So for example, RDP. RDP is remote desktop protocol that extends, in effect, you're in the company desktop environment to an endpoint, and it gives you that remote windowing to the desktop. Now, RDP sometimes is put in the same position as a VPN product, so i.e., it's public facing. The actual best place for it to be is behind the VPN. And for an RDP server to only accept connections from the IP address of the VPN server. That way, an RDP is unfortunately one of the attack common most commonly attacked methods of cyber criminals gaining access to an organization. So actually sitting it behind the VPN and only allowing access from the VPN IP address, means that in effect you've turned the RDP server off from public facing, and you're removing that risk. So there's one very good use of VPN.
All right. So that's clearly one of the big gotchas is well, I mean that's more of a gotcha with RDP, but we kind of touched on the difference between sort of the need to understand what the VPN you're using is doing in the security and privacy space, whether it's simply providing a tunnel to the broader internet or providing that tunnel directly to the resources within the network that you're looking at. What are some of the other common gotchas things that you need to think about as an administrator or MSP managing these kinds of things in terms of making sure things are as secure as possible when you're rolling this out or running it?
But one of the things you want to make sure is one, that it's using the VPN product you're using is secure itself. So, i.e., it's using a good grade of encryption. Now, I will say, I would challenge you to find one in these days. I'm sure we could find one that isn't using a good grade of encryption. Yeah, because they all should be. There's no reason why they shouldn't be. So you're looking for something along those lines. Multi-factor authentication is a must. Yeah, this is the point. This is an entry point. This is a door to the inside and outside world. You know, whichever way you look at the door, potentially it's a swinging door, isn't it? It allows people in and allows some traffic out. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that that door has the best security on it. So, yeah, strong passwords, very strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, and of course, only for the users that actually need it. Yeah. So only configure it for and review who's using it on a frequent basis. So if somebody, you know, is let's think of a good scenario. Say somebody goes off on maternity leave and decides to check their email on a frequent basis. Once they come back to work, maybe you're turning off that remote access, or maybe somebody's going on a trip and they're going to do some email and work while they're out on that trip. Then maybe you're allowing VPN access, but when they come back, you should remove it. You know, this shouldn't be a one shoe fits all scenario where every employee has VPN access.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so limit who can access through it. The other consideration here is administration rights. You know, do you allow network administrators to come in through the VPN? Because if you do, then potentially, if those credentials get stolen, then you're opening a much bigger door. You're opening the floodgate, so to speak, to the cyber criminal. Because if they can get those credentials and come through the VPN, then they're inside the network fully. Right. So you might want to consider limiting remote access or VPN access for network administrators as well.
So that's, it sounds sort of like the basics of cybersecurity hygiene. Just kind of make sure everything is thought through and that access that is granted is access that is required type things.
Yeah, absolutely. You should treat it in the same way that you should treat other parts of your network. But just bear in mind, this is a potentially a big open door to the network. If somebody breaches the VPN, then they are in without being in, actually, without physically being inside. Other things to think about is in the same way is vulnerability and patching. You know, VPNs run software. You know, we've already said it could run on a server. It might be a device, an appliance-based VPN. Yeah, either way, it's running software. And as we know, all software, unfortunately, from time to time, has vulnerabilities. And it's about understanding those vulnerabilities and the severity of them in your environment and then patching mm-hmm. them accordingly when the patches are released. Now, with a VPN, without doubt, you should patch the VPN as soon as the vendor releases a security patch, because it is the front door of the network.
And to your point earlier about the attackers being able to get into the network, if they get those network administrator privileges, it would be, I guess, potentially the same risk there in terms of getting in through a hole in the VPN. Can you give me any color, any analysis on how frequently the VPN itself is a vector of attack?
Well, unfortunately, it's because of the functionality that it gives, the credential theft around here is significant. So if you're going to socially engineer somebody's password, domain password and such like, and even maybe their MFA ability, we've seen instances where administrators are duped over the phone into giving out their MFA response or whatever in socially engineered attacks. Potentially that's at a remote access VPN level, because that gives the cyber criminal the path in as an administrator. So this is very common, because this isn't limited or restricted access that I've then got to work hard for. Once I have an in through, unfortunately, what is an extended cable from the network out to me, then potentially I'm free to roam.
So for a partner who's advising customers beyond the sort of beyond the sort of basic of what are you trying to do with this VPN? Are you trying to provide remote access to the internet that is somewhat private or secure, or are you trying to provide access to resources within the company that's private and secure? Sort of aside from that point, what are the or are there any sort of decision points on whether to go consumer or whether to go the more enterprise server slash appliance?
Well, for any business, the right way to do this is with a VPN back into your own network. I would only venture down that consumer route if you and I started our own business, Rob, and we were selling, I don't know, grommets and nuts and bolts. And we were only doing certain things online, or maybe we're landscapers. Maybe that's a better example. And maybe we're just sending invoices to our customers every now and again. But maybe a consumer VPN is fine for us then. But if your business is transacting online or doing anything with other partners online, then actually I'd recommend having that VPN back in your own infrastructure. But if there is an infrastructure, that's my point, maybe with small businesses. You and I might be using an invoice package from a cloud provider, and then it's only about securing our end of that connection. So important to have that definition of when to use one or the other. But if you're going to use a VPN, a VPN device, there are some things that you should be thinking of. And when I say device, it could be software. Make sure that it is credible. So make sure it has got good encryption algorithms. So for example, maybe FIPS validated cryptographic modules. Make sure that actually the device has, if you're using one of the, and there are a few out there of what I define as software solutions, make sure it's got signed binaries. Make sure the device you put it on has got a secure boot process, because bear in mind, this device is sitting on the perimeter. Make sure you're actually hardening the operating system on that device so that the underlying operating system it's running on doesn't produce a vulnerability that could be attacked. So actually follow some guidelines on hardening down the device you actually run the VPN software on. And CISA in the US, so the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, have a number of guidelines on actually selecting and hardening remote access VPNs if you're going to put one of these into your business. So I would use a document as a checklist of looking down this document and turning around and saying, okay, it's got this and it's got this and it's got this, and making sure you follow their guidance.
Beyond the basics, is there a need for much training around this? It's in most operating systems, it's a pretty understandable and manageable function to connect via VPN, and obviously, you're going to know when you need to use it because you're not going to have access to those resources otherwise. But aside from the basics, how to connect, what do we need to be training our users about?
Well, so certainly there's cyber hygiene, but there's also an element of, I would use a certificate-based VPN product if this was my business. So whereas you as the remote client requires a certificate from the administrator. So if you truly are a remote worker, so if you're up in the northern regions of Canada, and living a long way from maybe the office, somebody's going to have to be able to, one, tell you where to download the package as a VPN client, but they're probably going to have to issue you a certificate and tell you where to put the certificate, et cetera, et cetera. So there may be some administrative tasks that somebody needs to do around actually getting this up and running. But it shouldn't be overly complicated. The certificate could be embedded into an email, and then you just need to tell the person where to put the certificate and to install the package. But we should follow the same cyber hygiene that we would follow in normal circumstances. One thing it does, one thing we must remember, and I think people tend to forget, is, VPN doesn't make everything absolutely secure. It's a piece of software that provides you the secure tunnel. That doesn't mean you can do anything in the tunnel. Please follow the directions of the road the tunnel's going in. Make sure you're not going into the oncoming traffic or whatever, however you want to put that. So, yeah. But also be aware that actually as the end user, your company may well be monitoring traffic through that VPN tunnel. And they may well be proxying that so that you can only get to certain areas in the corporate network. Mm-hmm. And you know, they may well be then applying a web filter on there as well, monitoring what websites you're visiting, et cetera, et cetera. It depends how it's configured. Whether your device is allowed to go off to the internet and all traffic destined for the corporate environment goes through the VPN, or does all traffic go through the VPN and then is it dispersed from there?
And took to the internet.
It depends how somebody's configured it.
And as the ones likely to do that configuration, what are the benefits, downsides of taking either of those approaches, kind of the bring it all in and then send it all out, or send internet out and let everything else come in when where allowed, obviously.
Well, I was going to say I'm probably more of the opinion that you allow internet traffic from my machine that's just internet traffic to do its thing, and you're only things that need to go back to the corporate. Because otherwise, you're in effect creating if you've got people moving, for example, large graphic files into a cloud service provider,
right.
Maybe they don't all need to come back through my own infrastructure, because it's going to use a whole heap of bandwidth and clog everything up. So maybe it's only for traffic. To me, it's only for traffic that actually needs that extra level of security and needs to get to something in the corporate environment. But you know, on top of it is also then using web application firewalls. So some will sit with VPN traffic and detect and block web application exploit attempts, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a VPN is part of a layered approach. So you've probably got you've probably got that web application firewall. You've probably got your VPN. You've probably got some form of IAM solution in there as well, of access management, identity access management. So it's a series of devices that are giving you, in effect, access to the applications you need to get to when you're working remotely. Just out of interest, Rob, to share with you a little bit of history here.
Please.
One of my very early jobs in my early 20s was working for a bank, and we deployed remote access then, and we were using modems over public network telephone systems, and we were using MMP5 from the modem to modem. Yeah. So we were actually encrypting traffic, which is not dissimilar to what a VPN does these days. So I'm just saying that was 30 years ago. I'm just showing how old I am.
And it's a venerable technology.
But my point is, this is not a new, new. The idea of encrypted tunnels or encrypted traffic is not a new concept. It's just how we deploy it.
Right. We covered a lot of territory in terms of what it is, how it works, what we need to know to make sure it's as locked down as possible. Anything else that the solution providers need to know in this?
Well, the big one I think in here for me is patching. You know, there's been a number of incidents recently where, if I look at vulnerability disclosures, there were a number of active exploited VPN products. There were a number of vulnerability disclosures. So I think in 2023, I'm just checking my number here, there were 133 VPN vulnerabilities disclosed with an average score of 7.35. So that's on the CVE database. So 133 is quite a lot, and a severity score of 7.35 out of 10 is, on the top end of the scoring as well. So the one thing I'd say is, don't assume because it's a VPN secure, make sure you really are staying on top of it, whether it's needing to be patched. And turn off, a lot of VPNs have other things built into them as well that you may not be using. So additional traffic types, they might offer different connection types. If you're only using it for standard network traffic, turn off everything else. Turn off all the other features. If they don't need to be on, turn them off, because the more limited set of features that you allow the VPN to talk on, yeah, the more limited the cyber criminal has the opportunity to come and breach it.
No, it makes sense. It's good. It's good advice across the network and in just about any aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, to you and I, a lot of this may, you know, and I think you're inferring this is common sense, isn't it? I think that's what you're nearly saying. But unfortunately, you know, if we go down to somebody who, you know, take somebody in a school district who maybe teaches computing to students and tries to run their IT for the school district, this might not be common sense to them. So it's actually important that they understand and have those considerations, because you know they might deploy a VPN in order to protect typically RDP in that type of environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but making sure they do it correctly is super important.
Well, and even if it is common sense to them, it might be item in that scenario you describe. It might be item 145 on the list of things they need to keep in mind. So. Bumping it back up to the top of the list and making sure that they take that look is something that that any smart partner can and should be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the cool things in here is if you are deploying something like this, if you're an end user, then actually go to a reseller who's got somebody who's an expert actually at configuring a VPN, and that's their day job. And use their expertise to make sure it's secure.
Yeah, as almost always, it comes back to that role as the trusted advisor around technology.
Yeah, and VPNs. Yeah, one thing I would say, Rob. I mentioned RDP earlier, and I mentioned education.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, one of the big opportunities still out there, actually in the channel, is you go out there. I think there are a lot of people still running public RDP. Yeah, and that to me is VPN low hanging fruit, because if you can go on to the public network, and there's lots of ways they can do this, Shodan and such like, if you find organizations in your area that are still running public RDP servers, you know, I would be contacting them and telling them that they should potentially consider putting this behind a VPN to secure it. And it's a low-hanging piece of fruit for sales purposes. And I will share with you a very quick story here of somebody I know. I happened to be somewhere the other day where somebody has got a new job. They came home and said a BYOD. Well, they didn't actually use the terms BYOD, but it was a BYOD moment where they turned and said, I've got this new job. I can access my email remotely. They're not technically aware. Yeah, and they turned around and said, apparently, I can do this on my own machine. Yeah, here are the instructions. I'm a bit confused. Any chance, and if you're the person with some knowledge, you get handed the piece of paper and say, could you help me?
Yeah.
And they handed me the piece of paper. I sat there, downloaded RDP to their machine, and I put in their domain password and then switched the machine off. Yeah, closed the machine down and said, okay, let me show you how this is going to work from a clean boot. Booted the machine up, clicked on the RDP client, and bang, they've got network access, no password, it was cached, no multi-factor authentication, and no VPN. So I'm just pointing out, you know, we might think these things don't exist. Unfortunately, they do, yeah? So if I was a reseller in Peterborough, Ontario, then I might actually go on a Shodan and look to see whether there were any regionally apparent RDP servers facing the public network that might be better off hiding behind a VPN. I'm just pointing out there are good ways to go and find your prospects.
No, appreciate it. That's something we always have an eye on around here. Tony, as always, you've brought a lot to the table, and we've learned quite a bit, and we got some leads maybe if we follow up on that. So as always, appreciate your time, sir.
Oh, always my pleasure, Rob.
So there you have it, what you need to know about VPNs, courtesy of Tony Anscom. I'd like to thank Tony for once again taking the time to join the show. Thank ESET Canada for their continuing support of the site, and of course, thank you for listening. We'll be right back here next week as we take a look at some of the biggest security trends of the first half of this year, as we're joined by Steve Brining of Acronis to walk us through the findings of their first half report. Between now and then, please do consider subscribing to the show if you haven't already, or following it, depending on what your podcast app calls it. And if that app allows you to do so, please do leave a review and or rating. Till next week, I'm Robert Dutt for ChannelBuzz.ca. Stay safe out there, and I'll see you around the channel.